This is a recording of the open meeting of the Federal Election Commission held on October 19, 2006. Should you have questions after listening to this recording, please call the FEC at 1-800-424-9530 or email us at info@fec.gov.
Second item of business this morning concerns embezzlement enforcement policy, and we have two late submitted documents. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to move for the suspension of the rules for the timely submission of documents to consider agenda documents 06-67 and 06-68.
Vice Chairman has moved. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed. Motion carries by a vote of all six commissioners present. Our first document on this topic was submitted by the Vice Chairman. Mr. Vice Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Since arriving at the Commission in January, I've been struck by the number of cases in which a political committee suffers a misappropriation of funds at the hand of a member of the committee staff, often the treasurer or the vice treasurer. Frequently, the embezzlement is masked in one way or another by inaccurate reports filed with the Commission. The misappropriation often results in both a loss of funds to the committee and the beginning of an enforcement action by this agency against the committee for misreporting its receipts and disbursements. In many of these cases, the misappropriation could have been prevented if the committee had even minimal internal controls in place to provide some check on the individuals handling the committee's finances. It is within the self-interest of both the Commission and the political committees we regulate for these committees to have effective internal controls in place to prevent the misappropriation of committee funds and to ensure the accurate reports are filed with the Commission. In pursuit of this goal, we're putting out two different documents for public comment today. The first is a clear description and discussion of the types of protective internal controls that a committee should consider when developing an internal controls policy. Joe Stoltz, the head of our audit division, will be speaking about that document shortly. The second, which my staff developed with the insight and assistance of a number of other commissioners, proposes a concrete set of minimal steps that all committees should take to prevent the misappropriation of funds. To encourage the widespread adoption of these minimal standards, this policy would make clear that the Commission will not proceed in an enforcement action against the victim of the embezzlement for reporting violations so long as the committee had in place these minimal standards and took the necessary corrective steps after discovering the misappropriation. The Commission is very interested in comments from the public on this approach. Specifically, we would like to know whether the approach of providing concrete guidance on the necessary internal controls and a clear understanding of the effect of having these controls in place on the Commission's decision on whether to pursue an enforcement action would be a more or less effective way of increasing compliance with the law. Do the steps we've outlined today set forth effective controls for committees of varying sizes, or should we have different standards for committees with different levels of activity? Are these the correct minimal safeguards? Are they sufficient? Are they practical? The comments of the public on these questions, as well as any other issues that this draft policy presents, will be very helpful to the Commission as we think through the best way to proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman. Mr. Stoltz, any opening comments on your document?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Earlier this year, we were asked to develop an educational piece on internal controls for political committees, and the request came from the same concern, that we seem to be seeing increased numbers of these cases. And in a lot of instances, basic internal controls were apparently not in place. Internal controls, obviously, are not a new concept. 35 years ago, when I was at Penn State, it was drummed into us time and time and time again, and it wasn't new then. Much has been written by people in the profession, both in government and outside of government, on the subject. And the Internet provides us easy access to volumes and volumes of information on the subject. And much of what is in the document here today was gleaned from various sources found in some Internet searches. We added to that emphasis in places where we often see problems. Wire transfers that don't get reported, and lack of basic reconciliation procedures, things that we took as an opportunity to point out to people. Never hurts to remind folks again and again that some of these are necessary and good practices. Two problems with any internal control piece. One is one size can't possibly fit all. I mean, we literally run into committees in our audit process where the candidate's mom keeps the books, and she is it. And on the other end of the spectrum, you have political action committees of major corporations and labor organizations that have access to large and sophisticated accounting departments and internal audit functions. We're trying to aim here.
And still manage to get stolen from.
Still manage to get stolen from. That's the second problem. No system is foolproof. What we're aiming at here is a little towards the lower end, somewhere above where mom keeps the books, but certainly below a major corporation. Finally, some of these procedures are not aimed solely at intentional acts, but also at errors, innocent human error that occurs that also causes problems with reporting. One of the things that we see over and over and over again, and have for years, is wire transfers. And these tend to be big payments. You know, pay the media company with a wire transfer. They aren't a normal transaction. They don't flow through the normal system. They don't get recorded. The reports are way off because they are the really big transactions. When my guys go in to do an audit and they're trying to reconcile things, and if there's a big difference, this is the first thing they do, is they go look for the wire transfers to see how many of them didn't make it to the report. So these procedures are aimed not only at intentional acts, but also common errors that can be discovered through just some basic checks and balances built into the system.
Thank you, Mr. Stoltz. Discussion of the documents before us? Commissioner Weintraub.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm very enthusiastic about this project, and I want to particularly thank Mr. Stoltz and his staff for wading through that vast array of material that's out there and translating it into a document that I think is very readable and hopefully would be very helpful to people. And I also want to thank the Vice Chairman for his leadership on this project and his staff, Alex DeMotz, Mike French, and Adam Neufeld for their work in synthesizing Joe's good work into a one-pager. I love one-pagers. And I think that that's exactly the kind of guidance that potentially could be most helpful to people. I think it's what the Commission ought to be doing, to be proactive and to be out there trying to provide guidance to people on how to comply with the law. We do it in our conferences. We do it on our website. We do it in a lot of ways. And I think this is another positive step in that direction. The boy, I'm struck. That's really an exercise of mother love to agree to be the treasurer of somebody's committee, although I bet the rate of embezzlement on those committees is very low where mom is the treasurer.
And funds are carefully managed.
Very carefully managed, hoarded perhaps. So I think this is great, and I appreciate everybody's efforts pulling these documents together. And I hope that the regulated community will find them helpful, and I hope that they will tell us if there are ways in which we can be more helpful.
Thank you. I share Commissioner Weintraub's thoughts about the importance of this project, and also want to thank my colleagues, and in particular the Vice Chairman, and also Mr. Stoltz and his team for their work on this. We've confronted a number of very difficult embezzlement cases over the last couple of years, and so I think this project's quite timely, particularly as a new election cycle, the 2008 presidential election cycle is about to begin. It seems like people are already running for president, but it'll be a very intense and active cycle. So I think the timing of this project is very fortuitous. The reason why it's important is I think everyone agrees that if you've got particular individuals who embezzle funds and otherwise violate the law, that they will be subject to liability under FICA for the violations they themselves commit. But what we're dealing with now is whether on top of that, under what circumstances should the political committees also face liability, and oftentimes significant liability, for the fact that their books were not in order and for the fact that their reports were not accurate. And I think there's broad consensus on the agency that under appropriate circumstances, these committees should face additional liability in addition to the individuals who are the wrongdoers, particularly if the committees fail to exercise due diligence in terms of the accuracy of their books and the accuracy of their reports to the FEC and to the public. And we have been wrestling with a number of difficult cases about what exactly that standard ought to be. Should it be a reckless disregard standard or a gross negligence standard in terms of the committee's obligations to make sure that their reports are accurate? But I think we all agree that it's an important line for us to flesh out, and this enforcement policy effort, I think, is designed to lay out concrete mileposts for committees to abide by. And if they do abide by them, they should be treated in a different fashion from committees who utterly fail to discharge their obligations, which is an entirely different situation. So I think it's an important project. Look forward to getting the comments and seeing if we can reach consensus on a policy statement in this area. Additional discussion on these issues? Are we prepared to entertain a motion or additional discussion? Commissioner Mason.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am also enthusiastic about this effort. One thing that I thought was important was to put this out for public comment because the principal issue, as you pointed out, that we're dealing with is not whether the embezzler is liable, but whether the committee, which strictly speaking is a victim, is also liable. And that's a tough and delicate question. And when we look at other areas of the law, with for instance, publicly traded corporations or with fiduciaries such as consumer, commercial, or investment banks, there are detailed sets of rules about what they have to do and their auditing procedures and their reporting procedures and so on like that. And if the companies violate those, they're liable in a lot of cases for violations of those, even if there's no embezzlement. But if there's an embezzlement and they've also failed to live up to the relevant standards, then they are liable, in essence, for the results of the embezzlement. The situation as to political committees is less well-defined because essentially what we have is the best efforts provision in the statute. If treasurers do their best to obtain and maintain information, then that's good enough. And so the question we're answering in a very generic way is, okay, what is best efforts here? And what I hope we'll get some comment on is whether, for instance, the vice chairman's document strikes the right balance of necessary factors. You know, is this enough or should there be some more? What committees want very much, my sense is a checklist like the vice chairman's document. Okay, tell us what to do, and we'll do it. And the value of that from our perspective is that if we give them a checklist, a lot of them will comply with it. I think a very large number will comply with it. And while I know there's going to be some concern about that being a get-out-of-jail-free card, the benefit is that there'll be a lot fewer violations and a lot fewer problems because if we give concrete guidance, people will follow it. And if we give less concrete guidance, you know, we will get a lower level of adherence. And so I do hope we get some comments about the sort of range presented here between Joe's statement, which is fairly detailed, especially for us non-accountants, which is probably all of us, everyone but Joe, and the vice chairman's, which is frankly a pretty short list. And that would be my question: is this enough of the important steps to at least for a small committee to represent some kind of minimum? I also want to emphasize what a couple of people have alluded to in one way or another, and that is, we got around to these embezzlement cases 3 or 4 years ago, and one of the comments I was offered at the time, as some of these closed out from one of the outside counsels, is, oh, this is it. You know, that when you had the first big notable embezzlement case, everybody went and checked, and that's why you got a whole bunch. Well, now we've had another round. And so evidently it wasn't it, and there does appear to be a systemic problem. And as Joe Stoltz pointed out, the sad fact of the matter is that for the vast majority of political committees, there aren't insufficient internal controls. There are effectively no internal controls. There's no systematic thought about it. Internal controls may be in place, but they're almost an accident rather than an intentional structure. And while I'm not a big advocate of more regulation and putting more requirements out there, when we've seen these violations occur over and over again, I think it sort of begs for a systematic response. And so this is the sort of guidance that I thought would be very useful. And I thought it was very important. While I don't think it may be best achieved through a regulation, I do think it would be best achieved through a process that allows public comment, and so I think that is also very important.
Thank you, Commissioner Mason. Additional discussion of the documents before us? Are we prepared to entertain a motion? Vice Chairman Lenhart.
Mr. Chairman, I would like to move that the Commission instruct the staff to put out Agenda Document 06-67 and 06-68 out for public comment for 30 days.
Vice Chairman Lenhart has moved to instruct staff to release Agenda Document 06-67 and 06-68 for public comment for 30 days, after which time the Commission will take these matters up in due course. Discussion on the Vice Chairman's motion. Hearing none, I'll call the question. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? Motion carries by a vote of 6-0. Thank you very much. Thank you, Mr. Stoltz, very much. Thank you, Mr. Vice Chairman, for your work on this.